Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're back with RCR Greenwashed with Jaspreet and Don, and it's time for our rural update, as we occasionally get. And the prime person we go to in this forum is Bryce McKenzie from Groundswell. And so welcome back, Bryce. We have had you on about 6 weeks ago, but you've been to the field days and, yeah, you know, you've met with the politicians, you've rubbed shoulders with the hoi polloi of farming, let alone the politicians who tried to take their suits off for a day or two. How did it go? How was the sentiment at the field days?
Well, hello, Don and Jaspreet. Good to be back speaking with you again. The feeling at field days was, I'd have to say, people were trying to put on a brave face and act buoyant. Certainly a much better feeling than last year, totally different altogether than last year. So there was a type of buoyancy there, but I doubt that that would have related to any of the businesses at the field days having successful sales.
Right. And I should remind our listeners that the field days we're talking about are what are the New Zealand National Agricultural Field Days in a place called Mystery Creek near Hamilton. They take place every year, unless there's pandemics and things get in the way. But it's a huge, huge event. I think it's the largest ag field days in the Southern Hemisphere. So plenty of people there, plenty of people merging their thoughts and socializing. And yeah, it's a place where the business, well, some business gets done, but you're suggesting that the sentiment was a bit low-key this year, Bryce.
Yeah, definitely. No doubt that people were buoyed by the fact that there's a change of government, Don. That was really noticeable. And I think that's the only place that the buoyancy come from. Sure, there's been a few things that this new government has turned back and they are working on other things, which is very good to see. But is it reflected in higher prices or what would you say, a buoyancy in people wanting to be farming? I don't think that's come through in any way yet. So there's more hope, and there's more just hope that it's going to happen rather than seeing it happen.
Yeah, and what's worse in all of this, they say inflation's at 4.6% and reducing, or 4.7% and reducing to just over 4%. But we've seen non-tradable inflation, you know, government, local government costs go through the roof. And I don't know why it wasn't front and center for this government, this coalition, to put the brakes on local government, especially when you see 20, 25% rate increases mooted. Why they just weren't told, sorry, that is not acceptable in this current environment. You'll go back and cut your cloth. If you have to get rid of some of the flaky stuff at the edges, do so and get back to core business. That edict doesn't seem to have come from the Prime Minister or his ministers yet. And it's so frustrating because, as you know, in a farming sense, some of the biggest bills coming at farmers now are to local authorities. And yeah, it seems like the job scheme is going on unabated in local authorities, let alone central government. So non-tradable inflation, is that your biggest bugbear at the moment, Bryce, inside your farm gate?
Yes, I think it is, Don. I mean, that's for, you know, rates and that sort of thing. You get, for in the country, you really get nothing for them except your road taken care of occasionally. There's nothing else in it really for rural people. So we pay a massive amount to actually have our little bit of gravel road looked after. And I guess you could say that, you know, once you get out on the tar seal, it's all really nice and they're looked after too. But we spend far more time on our local roads in the country and they're only just being maintained and no more. So, yeah, with inflation and rates, you just pay a lot more and you don't get anything more from it.
Well, and I know in your area you've got a very active catchment group and you've done lots of great stuff. But my view is this, when you see environment councils around New Zealand putting double-digit rate increases upon people, and, you know, some of them our way were sort of 22, 23% initially, and they think you've given you a big Christmas present when it's reduced to 12, and then they've robbed some piggy banks to keep it to 12 instead of 16 or 17. I look at the billions of dollars that have been spent by regional councils, filtered through regional councils, sorry, and what has hit the environment, an improvement for the environment. And you'd have to say it's a very poor rate of return on investment, because actually the environment doesn't take any notice of bureaucrats spending a lot of money getting a paycheck. It actually respects people like you and me who do good stuff, and we do it of our own volition. You don't need a busybody with a clipboard telling you how to operate. And so my point is, these regional councils have to be put back in the box. We do need the Minister for the Environment, aided by the Prime Minister and the Coalition, to say, get back to stuff that is vital for the environment. And I just don't see that sentiment. And I don't think you do either, by the look of your shaking of the head.
Yeah, no, I certainly don't. And I submitted it at our local council, and the whole theme of everything I said was get back to basics. You know, to listen to people coming along there and wanting to have a fenced-off dog park, and they want money for upgrading their swimming pool, and in one case, building a new one. And you're looking at, you know, 25, 30 million for something like that. When, you know, farming's in the state it's in, it's just not justifiable. And even our local one here, our vintage museum, which was built by volunteers, and one of the questions they asked was, you know, should we be paying for a new roof on it? I said, well, you know, that's in my hometown, and if it needs a new roof, I would have thought we'd all get together and pay for it. Why somebody in Milton's going to be paying for the roof on our vintage museum, I'll never know. And that's what's happened. We've got away from the community things. We expect the councils to pay for everything that we have. And it's just wrong.
Yeah, it is just wrong. I know user pays is where I sit. And of course, people say, but if you did all that, they wouldn't have their local amenities. Well, if people value something, they're prepared to pay for it. It's just when you use rating as the blunt tool, using property values generally as the proxy. And I'll never forget the Dunedin Stadium. And you would have been caught up on this, Bryce, that when the Dunedin Stadium was built, I remember writing an article saying, why is basically the backside of a woman in Queenstown costing more to sit? Why does it cost her more to effectively have a right to sit in the Dunedin Stadium? Why shouldn't the pay? Because basically Queenstown properties were very expensive and now were being potentially screwed. And why wouldn't she just buy a ticket and be as happy as anybody else going there? But no, the local authority borrowed a couple of hundred million, and they were definitely wanting to get it back using property values as the test. I mean, no relativity to the use of the stadium at whatsoever. But there,
yes, I was involved in part of that, trying to fundraise, although that was more when they did Carisbrook up. And
yep.
I was amazed at the number of country people that supported that, because, of course, it's an added cost for them to get to the game. And then, of course, when the Forsyth Bar come along, same thing happened. Once again, a lot of country people got behind it, and most of the anti come from within the city, where they had the most to gain.
Yeah. Anyway, look, let's get back on track with the Out to the Field days. Who did you rub shoulders with up there? Did you meet the Prime Minister?
No, we actually didn't. He was meant to turn up, but he must have got way late. He was at the field days, but he didn't. We were in what they called the hub, or the ag hub, advocacy hub, and we had four politicians speaking a day. So there were 16 politicians that spoke for the whole of the field days. Plus, of course, the other ones come along too to listen and to support. So, we had a great time talking with them. I guess the hub went really well. There's a few things they probably need to change, and I'm sure they'll look at doing that. But it was good, because the people that come in there wanted to talk about agriculture. You didn't get the town tire kickers who wanted to know what you were doing. Whether that's good or bad, I don't know. But it was good because people come in there to talk about agriculture. So, yeah, we got a chance to speak to most MPs. Todd McClay opened it and spoke the first day, and then there was just a steady stream of although Chris Hipkins spoke, so there was a few Labor ones spoke as well. So, yeah, it was good to meet up with them all anyway and have a chat.
Hmm. So what if you want to, sorry, Jess Breed, I butted in again. What's the prime aside, we talked about it earlier, inflation and just the cost of stuff. The banking inquiry, can you, what was that sentiment like? What was there a lot of questions about the bankability of farming?
Yeah, there certainly was. There's no secret that there's a lot of pain out in the rural areas. I mean, we can't claim all the pain either. There's a lot in urban areas as well, because it's going to shift to there once the rural people stop spending. Naturally, who does that affect? It's the urban people. So although they may feel that they're detached from it, they're certainly not. Interest rates are probably the hottest topic about. Also, the green loans. We're getting a lot of feedback from people that have great equity but are expected to do something in the green area to actually pick up loans. And the ones that are able to are just saying, no, well, I don't want your loan. But we don't hear so much from the really young ones as to how it's affecting them, other than the ones that we know directly, because I guess they tend to not want to rock the boat because they don't want a black mark against their name. So, we really feel that there's some people out there that are getting squeezed by, you can have this money, but you need to be doing this. And that really annoys us, because who sets the benchmark for something like that? How have they got the right to actually be doing that? Are they skilled in that type of management? So it's a real concern, Don. So we're really pushing to have that included in the select committee that's looking into banking.
Most people, Bryce, townies, don't have much of an idea of the fact that there could almost be at times a 2% differential between the rate of interest of urban lending and rural lending, a 2% rate of differential. And you've called for inquiry, Minister Nicola Wills. She's making the right noises right now. And feds have put in a great submission. And I wonder what would be your thoughts about this headline that feds recently said. It said that New Zealand's rural lenders, Federated Farmers says, New Zealand's rural lenders are acting as pseudo-regulators through their membership of the Net Zero Banking Alliance. And banks, all of them have said, they've hit back saying that, Feds is wrong. But yet, when I go to, say, the Westpac's own page of their sustainability-linked loan, they say that ours was the first sustainability-linked loan in the New Zealand agriculture sector. It will include a 1.5-degree science-based emission reduction target, which they will validate against global best practice. That global best practice comes from the United Nations convened Net Zero Banking Alliance. It is diabolical. It almost seems to me that our policies are now being driven by global bankers, not by our governments.
Yeah, have to agree entirely, Jaspreet. That's exactly what's going on. And where are they getting their criteria from? We know it's not local based on what's happening locally, don't we? It's something that's being brought in from overseas, and that's pretty scary.
It is, especially when the Reserve Bank governor, and he's openly mentioned it, the Deputy Reserve Bank governor, in an interview with the Newstalk ZB, they said that we are doing this. You have a higher rate of interest here because our analysis is that the return on equity for the risk that banks take is higher in rural New Zealand than in other countries. Mm. I don't agree with that statement. The facts do not agree with that sort of a claim there. But they say it's a higher cost because we somehow, some of the best farmers in the world, are a bigger risk.
Yeah. They're just looking for some sort of justification, aren't they? They've been blaming it on the banking regulations for quite some time. That they have to hold twice as much now in stock for downturns or something. You may know the actual terminology they use.
Yep. So they have to keep, their lending is less generous than before, which is fine. They are entitled to, they are ultimately a business. But when banks take over the role of the regulator, where do you draw the line?
Yeah.
And moreover, listeners, you may not know that in New Zealand, personal and home lending is 65% of the book, the lending book in New Zealand. Agriculture is down to 11% of the total lending. And business lending is about 24% of it. And guess who has had the growth in lending in recent years? I know there's been mass migration to this country, but we're up to, it's since 2020, a significant lift in personal lending and home lending, and a significant reduction in rural lending. And that, as a percentage of total lending, we've actually paid our way, actually, as a percentage, you would say, by the demographic. But the other side of this that perhaps you two aren't thinking about, and I'm just going to put this out there, the New Zealand housing market is underpinned by the taxpayer. There's a lot of money goes into accommodation supplements, rental top-ups and the like. There's a lot of, and it's in the billions. I think it's around $3 billion now. That clearly underpins that market. And so farming has no subsidy, and we go cold, we're clean, and yet the housing sector isn't. But the isn't it interesting how the clean sector is getting the increased interest rates? Basically, we're offsetting not only taxpayer privilege into the housing market, but first home buyers or those green loans, as you talk about, through the other banks. So it's a vexed issue, and I don't know how you get to the bottom of it, but this green guilt that happens around lending, when you've got a bank trying to pretend that they're so virtuous and so green and everything's got to head their way, you should smell a rat. And you do see, as Jaspreet knows, we've talked about this a little bit off here, some big corporates getting these green loans.
One is the state owned, where you have PAMU, ex-LandCorp, availing of these big loans, which are at a discount. You have Craigmore Sustainables and big, big farmers. We are not talking of, the small family-owned individual farms. We're talking of bigger corporates who, of course, get the discounted loans at the expense of the other struggling ones.
It's a reflection on what happens to agriculture in general. I mean, you walk around the field days, getting back to that, but you walk around there and you look at the number of businesses that are at those field days, and they're all relying on agriculture to actually be in existence. And then you go on and you look at all the awards. I mean, this time of year, there's an award for just about everything you can imagine in agriculture. And who's paying for this? Who's the sponsors of this? It's your banks. It's your big businesses that have already made the money out of the agriculture industry anyway. So it's just the same old thing we're talking about with rates. Where does it stop that we actually just pay value for what we want and don't pay in excess so that these companies can go and spend our money doing other things and pushing their own company?
Yeah, well, I know that it frustrated me in the end too, Bryce, that the amount of awards. Now, they used to talk about celebrating success. That was the big buzzwords about 15 years ago, and probably they're still doing it. And it was nice to be involved. But you're right. I think we could have an award for everything. And we could have lots of black tie events for the bankers and the insurance agents and all the sundry people. But doesn't add one dime back inside the farm gate. It does ingratiate those people, does make them feel good. But so a bit of reality is required, I think. A bit of common sense getting back into it, the rural sector would be great. But, if you're a young person coming into it, and we need lots more young people in ag, and, trying to stimulate that would be a better discussion perhaps. But, you want them to have fun. You want them to enjoy their profession. And who is it that's taking the joy away from the profession is the question we should all be asking. And it ain't farmers ourselves. It's actually the government and the Klingons to government that are actually destroying the enthusiasm to be in farming. Now, it's all fine and dandy for a corporate to say, we're doing okay. We can go and borrow $80 million and we can do a few green things. But the owner-operator is who I want to represent. I don't want to represent corporate thinking. And if we don't represent owner-operators, and Groundswell's doing a great job of doing it, of representing owner-operators, we're in trouble. I don't think New Zealand would be a better place if we had corporate farming all over the place. Well, how do you feel about that, Bryce?
Oh yeah, no, I agree with what you're saying entirely, Don. The corporate farming thing, I mean, and we're seeing it happening more and more and more. It certainly is, only because I think a lot of the family farms now, there's parents are quite actively trying to put the children off going farming, because they're really concerned at what is happening in their industry. And that would never happened in my time, and I'm sure yours either. And I think most family farms, and I can think of a number, the fourth, fifth generation, and they're hoping to put the next generation in as well. And, but they're getting fewer and fewer and further between. They really are.
And, all of these last few years especially, I mean, I came to New Zealand in 2009, the first few years, I remember the low payout years after when $8, $8.50 was good, and then you dropped to $3.15. We've survived all of this. But something crazy has happened to this country after 2020. We have this sustainable agricultural finance program that MPI got involved in. They called it SAFI. They launched it in 2021 when everyone was distracted by COVID, Sustainable Agriculture Finance Initiative. They got Ernst & Young, a consultant, to get together with MPI and all the five big banks, ANZ, ASB, and set up a guidance document of how the sustainable finance plan is going to be initiated. These documents, Bryce, not many farmers, most people are not even aware of their existence, but they go to the very minutiae of how a farm environmental plan should be made, what needs to be there. They've given 7, 8 pages of documents of what your farm environment plan should be doing. We have... Our governments who we elect then have these agencies, MPI and others, who then go and act with private players like the banks and, the big consultants, and pretty much try to micromanage us behind the farm gate. And of course, you also have their own processors doing this. People seem to think that, farming is freedom and it's independence. It's anything but. It's become bureaucracy. I mean, I might as well go and take an office job now for what farming has become.
Yeah, good comments. It surprises me that they're going to that length on environmental plans, because I can assure you that we've done a lot of things in our catchment group to try and improve the environment and the water quality. But do you know what has the biggest difference? It's just people being conscious of what they're doing every day.
Yep.
And if that's all it takes, if you think what effect you're going to have on the environment when you're doing that job today and how you can mitigate it as much as possible, that's the biggest effect you can have on the environment that we can see. I mean, there are other things that add to it, and plantings and things like that, but a lot of the plantings are just a look good, feel good exercise, because they're not in critical source areas. So they're not really doing anything other than beautifying it. So, people just need to be aware of what they're doing. And as long as everybody's doing that, there's going to be improvements made.
Sorry, Jaspreet. I remember when I first got involved in the RMA sort of output, and we were all worried about point source discharge, which is stuff coming out of a pipe, mainly out of industry. And that seemed fair. Tidy that stuff up. No need for any effluent pond from a farm being straight into a creek either. None of that was sensible. All that seemed fair and fine. But all of a sudden in this century, early in it, the planners and the environmental consultants realize, there's a bigger game in town here. Let's talk about cumulative effect. And of course, that gave them carte blanche rights to involve everyone from the headwater of a waterway in the mountains to the sea. You're all in it, guilty or not. And that's why we have this rise in overt environmentalism that is really destructive. It's putting people off the profession that we chose. And I can't blame them, because we've all been labeled as guilty. Mm-hmm. And it's in my opinion, it is totally unfair, but there has been no politician willing to wind it back. And that's the problem I think we face today. So good that the RMA is having its reform, slow as it may be, Let's move on to something else that happened at the field days. I think Todd McClay and the minister talked about the revision of the ETS and any agriculture emissions involvement in it. And it seems that they've, for now, said animal emissions like methane and nitrous oxide will not be put into the emissions trading scheme. Seemed like something that you have been working for a long time, and I know I worked for it for years. But my cynical view, Bryce, is we're not out of the woods because there's still a massive compliance regime at the side. How do you see it?
Yeah, look, Don, it's really interesting. You know, I think back to when we tried to push the follies of EWOC, Econow, and everybody gave us more of a hard time because we were using a Maori name than anything else. So when we changed it to the farming tax, people caught on pretty quickly. And I can still remember the chairman of some of the farming organisations saying to me, "You don't realise the damage you're doing. We are already in the ETS. And unless we do something about this, then we will have to, it'll be confirmed and we will be in the ETS." And all I kept saying to them, well, you know, there'll be a change of government before any of this happens and anything can happen then. So I've had a little bit of a smile on my face ever since Todd McClay's announcement. But to go on and say the next part of what you said is so true, because we've got this new committee being, well, it's been set up. We know who the members of it are now, looking at no additional warming. Now, that's excellent because we know if they actually are focusing on no additional warming, then we're looking not too bad without getting too carried away because they're bound to find something from somewhere. But we know that we are not causing additional warming. We haven't done for quite some time because we're simply losing more and more stock numbers, so we can't possibly be adding to warming. So if they stick to that brief, they're going to find out that agriculture is actually adding to cooling, and that's what they'll have to come out and say, because they can't just say they're not adding to warming. And I guess the whole thing, though, is how tied up in this do you get? Because we could go right back to square one, couldn't we, and just say, well, why are we worrying about any of this anyway, as if we can make a difference?
Well, and that's what my view is you've got to do in the end, Bryce. I mean, this game has gone on for 25 years. It's an unfair game. It's a one-sided game to date. It's been predicated on a whole bunch of misinformation. When we finally, you get to assess the real science, you realize that the supposed warming effect of methane and the modeling about it was done effectively in a dry atmosphere in a laboratory with gases in isolation, never in the real and mixed atmosphere, where it shows clearly modeling, if you do that methane and nitrous oxide are irrelevant. Forget your stock numbers, forget everything, no compliance, go home, go to bed, don't need to do any more spending on this. We could bury it tomorrow. Let farmers have animals that are more efficient through productivity, getting the productivity traits. One of them may be reduced methane emissions from a sheep or a cow. But we do not need a regime, in my opinion. And so what I saw, and this is my rant, is that committee is still formed by the same people that were in the old committee. So we've got, that group, Mark II. What sentiment are they going to have that's any different if they're being advised by similar people? So we've got problems, I think.
Yeah, we certainly have. Hopefully this one will be more transparent than anything that's happened in the past. And maybe we can pick up on their points as they bring them out. But only time will tell.
Sure.
Because, we're hoping that we're going to actually have more input to what's happening, to the decision making. We're really disappointed not to see the likes of Tom Sheehan or Happer of Van Wijngaarden being brought in as to give the other side of the story. So that is really disappointing, because why wouldn't you? What have you got to hide? They haven't got anything to hide. They're quite happy to debate it. So that is disappointing for us.
Well, what they've got is the job scheme that they've all had for a long, long time. And some of them have moved on, but there's a new broom coming through all the time, just picking it up. And of course, we're, as taxpayers, let alone the farmer levy payers, going to be funding this nonsense. As is happening in Australia, it's happening in the United States, it's happening in many other countries worldwide, chasing this new nirvana of less methane coming from animals, supposedly going to stop global warming. It is a complete nonsense. It's a complete fabrication. And yet we get these people that can't have the courage to tell the truth. And when the governments of the day can't tell the truth or can't even want to hear it, we've got a big problem. Now, in this last few days, the Denmark government has said they're going to impose an animal tax, emissions tax on their cattle and pigs and ruminant animals. And I've made contact with some people in Denmark, and it's clear that there is antagonism there about it too. And right now, even though the media might have you believe it's a done deal, it's not a done deal. It's an agreement in principle to apply an emissions tax. But, you know, over there, quite different. These people, these countries in the European Union especially, might just say, oh, okay, we'll pay it, but we'll have an offset by the taxpayer over here. We'll do all the compliance, and they may not help us. So we've got to try and find Groundswell and anyone else that's involved. We've got to find allies around the world that know this is rubbish and we get it kicked for touch. Are you working with other agencies around the world, Bryce?
Look, it's very difficult to actually team up with them as such. I think everybody has a certain mistrust. We've encouraged Federated Farmers to reach out to Ireland, and we know that they are doing that presently. So hopefully we can. The problem is, Don, and I think you've just accentuated what real problem is. We stand alone when it comes to we pay our own way. Mm-hmm. New Zealand farmers pay our own way, and that's really difficult because overseas, if they want you to do something, they may cut your subsidy or they may give you more money so you do it. Over here, if we have to pay anything, we're not getting it from anybody. It's coming off our bottom lines. Mm. So we're quite unique. And so we have a different set of circumstances than anybody else, Don. And most people in New Zealand need to understand that New Zealand farmers stand alone and they go under alone. They really do. We can't put our hand out for government and ask for something. Now, you'll hear a government say that they subsidise farmers, but they're not. They're probably talking about the likes of AgriZero, where they've got $140 million that's been given to them to spend on finding mitigation techniques for methane. And so it's easy to say, well, you know, we're helping the New Zealand farmer out. We're giving them this money, but they're not. We never see the money. The money's been given to somebody to do a project that the government wants, not what we want, is what the government wants. So, but they count that as a subsidy to farmers. So it's all wrong, and it's not going to go away, because how many new organisations spring up and all of a sudden have got $140 million to spend?
Yeah, I call it the climate change casino. These people are right there. They're trading they're trading in a casino. It really annoys me. And they have no shame. They have no shame that they're feeding at that trough. Yeah. That's the bit that gets me. And farmers that want to constantly give into it. And we did have farmer organizations giving into it until you guys came along. I think they should hold their heads in shame. And look, I just take my hat off to Groundswell and to the Methane Science Accord for really starting to raise the ante. And I think there's some people starting to squirm in that climate casino, chasing the methane money. So I don't know, Bryce, good work. What else? To wrap up, we'd better give you time to get back and do some farm work.
I really wonder whether you get any time for farming at all, Bryce, for your globe project.
No, not at this time of year, not really. Actually, I'm actually away to Wellington on Tuesday to the primary industry summit. It's the first time I've gone to something like that. I've been asked to go along and speak on a panel. So I think they might have wanted somebody controversial.
Well, good work. I'm pleased you're the man. make sure you brush up and get your tie collar and tie on and fit in with that Wellington crowd.
Oh, I think I could turn up in my red bands, couldn't I?
Oh, okay. Yeah, look, well, you do a great job, Bryce. You do a great job, and you and your team. And it's important we have the activism that you have put out into the farming community for others to see. So, we needed it. We needed a circuit breaker because there was too much of the same old going on, and we were slowly being sold out. Got a lot of work to do. We need a whole lot of young people in the whole business of this to make sure they, get the enthusiasm, build the enthusiasm back to farming, because the last thing we need is those busybodies you talked about earlier, and bankers and insurances. They ain't the people that are going to make farming an enthusiastic place. It's actually getting the busybodies out of our life that actually help.
It's interesting you're bringing that up, and I don't want to go into it too much, but the future farmers were in the same area as us.
Mm.
And I'm really sorry, but if they're the future farmers, they're going to have struggle relating to actual farmers. They're quite happy to pay a tax on methane. Yep. It blew me away.
Don't understand. And interestingly, we never even, and it's my, I've been remiss here this morning, we didn't even talk about the KPMG agribusiness agenda. Jaspreet made me suffer the half hour or 40 minute interview on one other radio show with the author of that. And the language was so United Nations oriented. To me, he finally showed his background and his 15 years of authoring that paper, where he really has been all that time. And if you want to hear hollow language, just go right and listen and read that document. And it gives you no want to be a farmer, that's for sure.
Yeah,
and that's, did you ever come across that in the field days? Okay.
Well, we come across some United Nations stuff without a doubt, sustainable goals and that sort of thing. Yes. Future farmers are certainly involved in that.
Yeah, I see some of the Green MPs were part of that Future Farmers NZ, that initiative. I'm like, I shall see that where that heads to.
Yeah, but when you've got people in big offices, high-rise buildings, writing documents that are going to make inside the farm gate better, you know not to trust them.
Yeah.
I know that's we keep saying, Jaspreet and I keep saying, gee, Don, we've got to get a bit more upbeat in the show of ours. We do all this discussion with a smile, because we do get out of bed and we know our neighbours do, and we do feed our animals and make sure everything's right, but things could be so, so much better in this country if we just had the foot off our throat, from the regulator's foot off our throat.
Yeah, I think at least this government realises that if they're going to get themselves out of trouble financially, there's one sector they can rely on to do it. So it's just how much free range they're able to give us.
Bryce, there's a job for you going wanting in the world. Do you know where it is? It's the President of the United States. I think Bryce McKenzie could easily take that job right now.
Oh, dear me. I did watch the debate. Well, it wasn't a debate. I watched that farce on TV yesterday.
It's quite the spectacle, isn't it? But, Bryce, we will have to wrap up. Thank you so much once again for coming on Greenwash. Forever grateful that you guys chose to take this and run when you did in 2020, Don, and I were going back through your initial post that went viral. And here we are 4 years later. So thank you so much for all that you do for New Zealand.
Thanks for what you both do too. It's very much appreciated.
We'll watch for an update and we'll watch you speaking in Wellington if we can get a link. But we'll have you back for an update again from that panel.
I should never have told you.
Was it Primary Sector Summit? Yep.
Yeah. The Primary Industry Summit.
Industry Summit. Go well, Bryce.
Just another one of those award-winning sessions for people.
Yep.
Have fun.
You shine your boots.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bryce. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.